Talk, talk to me. WSRadio.com. Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, it's another week of Comics Talk Comedy. No, Jesse, he's out in Palm Springs with Brandon Young and Zoltan, I believe. But we do have our guest, Allison Gill. She's here in prompt. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, yourself?
I'm well today, thank you.
Yeah, today?
Today.
Today.
One day at a time.
That's the way you got to take it. So, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Did you do any comedy this week?
Not in the last week, but last night was my first in a long string of shows coming up.
So, okay.
Yeah, we were at the Comedy Palace last night, and we're there again tonight.
Okay.
It's Lana Turner and Allison Weber and I, and we do, we all play guitar. We're all girls.
Okay.
So we said, hey, we have things in common. So
right. Is that how you approach Zach to get the weekend?
I did. I said, look, I got Ralphie May's wife on the line.
Let's oh, she's this. Ralphie May's wife.
Yeah, actually, yeah. They oh. do the Perfect 10 and all that. And
okay.
Yeah, she's absolutely hilarious. And Allison Weber's just one of the sweetest people in comedy.
All right.
So, well, this is our third or fourth show. We're hoping to get it on the road here soon.
So you guys all just do music, or did you kind of implement both?
Allison does music through most of her set. Allison Weber does. Lana has about four, maybe five songs, and then I just do pretty much straight comedy and then the one song at the end.
Okay.
The people will riot if I don't play. So
is that a fact?
It's a fact. I've tried to drop that thing so many times and no one will let me.
Yeah. That's the blowjob song?
That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you put that on a CD?
Yeah, it's got a YouTube video and it's on a CD and it's actually on all of my CDs.
Okay.
Because, like I said, people get angry if I drop it.
Right. And how long have you been singing that song?
I wrote that song in 2006.
Oh, okay.
I didn't play it until 2008 because I thought it was so offensive.
All right.
I would make people cry. But it turns out people loved it. So I got a little too liquored up one night and played it on a dare.
Right.
Worked out.
And people, because you started with music before comedy, correct?
Yeah, I was straight musician and...
Like silly songs or like real music?
Well, I was a real, like, coffee house, coffee girl, guitar, like Jewel, but good. And that's what I was doing. I was like, people need to take my music seriously. Like, I was a musician. I've been my whole life. And then I remember, I'll never forget, I was at a Flaming Lips concert in 2004.
Okay.
And Liz Phair was opening. And nobody's listening to Liz Phair because they're all there for the Flaming Lips. Everyone's just kind of walking around, having their cocktails, waiting for the Flaming Lips to come up. And then all of a sudden, she plays a song called Hot White Cum. And the whole place, like freezes and, like, looks at her. And they're like, did she just say it? Did she say cum?
Is yes.
It? And they're like, oh. And it dawned on me, like, I need to be singing about ejaculate.
When you heard Hot White Cum, I heard my calling.
Yes.
I know what I've been put on this earth to do.
Because I wanted people to listen.
Okay.
And, you know, when you play in coffee houses and bars, you play regular songs or
right.
covers or whatever. They're sort of listening, but not really.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's it. Semen is the answer.
Yes.
And I wrote, I started writing sillier songs, dirty songs. And I would bring them into my act, like my music set,
right.
like one song at a time, over time. And then I would have these funny stories.
Even at, like, coffee houses and whatnot?
Mm-hmm, coffee houses.
And they were okay with you cursing and talking about that stuff?
Yep, and the Blarney Stone
okay.
pub, if you remember.
Well, yeah, I remember. I wouldn't say that's a coffee house, though.
The epic times of the Blarney Stone.
Yeah.
Pub. That was mostly where I started bringing them in.
Okay.
It's easier with drinkers, you're right. Coffee houses are a little tough.
But, yeah.
And then I would always tell funny stories in between until eventually my whole set was stories and these songs.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got approached one night by, it was Ryan Mervis, who you've had on the show
yeah.
here, who said, hey, I'm doing a show at the Comedy Store. You should be on it. And I was like, I'm not a comedian.
Mm. So you had no aspirations at all to switch to stand-up?
Never occurred to me until someone told me.
Were you a fan of it?
Oh, yeah. I've been born and raised.
Okay.
A fan of comedy. It just never occurred to me once.
All right.
I was like, that looks hard.
So your first show was at the Comedy Store?
My first show was on a
So weekend. It wasn't like an open mic? It was just an actual booked show?
Yep, a weekend booked show at the store.
It was a weekend?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I got up and I did, I think, seven or eight minutes. I told a story or two, and I did my song, and it went over, and I was like, okay, I need to write some jokes.
All right. How did, it went pretty well?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It went really well.
Okay.
So right out of the gate. And so I started writing jokes, sort of. I mean, my writing process isn't like I don't sit down and think of jokes and write them down. I just...
They just come to you.
Well, when you're out with your buddies and you say something funny and then you make a note of it and then you try it in your next set and it works or it doesn't, and then you... You know, that's kind of the, I think that's the way that Seinfeld does it. You know, he just builds his set.
Right.
Takes out, if something gets a bigger laugh than anything else in the set, he'll take out the other thing and put the new thing in.
And right.
He's got this golden.
Well, he works for years on bits, though, which I think is interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw the thing on Pop-Tarts, but he said he'd been working for like a couple of years on this Pop-Tart joke.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. And, like, I have my, my opener that I've done forever is that whole, you know, bet about the bra.
Mm-hmm.
And that joke started as a 20-second joke, and now two and a half years later, it's an 8-minute opener.
Wow.
So, yeah, I that's the way I do it.
Yeah, I don't think I do much of that. I think that I write it once, and if it works, I do it that way. If it doesn't work, then I just stop doing it.
You know what's fun is to go back to your old stuff that didn't work and try it again.
Yeah, I did that at the beginning of this year. I was actually enjoying comedy, so I went through all my old notebooks. And I hate it again. So it lasted about a month.
You enjoyed comedy for a minute?
Yeah, for like a month, and now I just hate it again. So. Do you go through that?
No.
No, you just always enjoy it.
I always enjoy it.
Okay.
I do.
That's good.
I can't. I don't know why. But...
We've had Patrick DeGeer on, and he said he bought his house from his T-shirt. I don't know if you've ever seen his T-shirt that he sells.
Oh, the one about the
Mexican family. So that song hopefully can buy you a house.
I don't know. We'll see. I don't know if we're there quite
yet. Yeah. Have you put it on a shirt?
Ooh, no. I haven't thought about that. The whole song.
Well, yeah, the entire song, all the lyrics.
Well, the problem is, and I know everybody runs across this, is that the whole premise of that song is that fat girls give good head because they're hungry. And since I've written that song, there's been countless internet memes. And so now it would just look like I'm ripping off a meme.
People have memed your own.
Right.
You missed the wagon on your time to make the money.
I did.
But no one's made a shirt, though. Couldn't you put the three separate women and just like quote that says, I'm hungry, about like a fat girl, a homeless woman, and what is the other one? Weed.
Stoned, yeah.
Yeah, so you could just make them look weed and stoned, homeless and fat, and just put I'm hungry on top.
I had a shirt for a while that just said WT fuck on it.
Okay.
Didn't buy a house, though.
No, no house. But that was a joke, though, but it wasn't your closing joke, right?
No, it wasn't one of the bigger ones.
Okay.
Just, I have to figure that out. I have to get on the shirt thing.
Yeah, we sold shirts when we did our little tour.
Oh, yeah.
We ended up with a lot of extra shirts. So
that's my fear.
Yeah.
I still have a suitcase of shirts from when I was in a band, like a decade ago.
Yeah, I found out last night, I guess Lauren left half of them at PAX Shores, so we lost half the shirts.
Oh, well.
So I guess we won't sell those.
I was thinking about taking them to, like, Goodwill. Like, I have, when I burned my first CD, like, my actual music CD, I burned, like, 1,000. So we do this, I can sell 1,000 records.
Right.
No.
Well, that was back when people were actually buying CDs, though, at least.
Right, right. I sent, like, 12 to CD Baby, and then now I have, like, 980. And we just took them to Goodwill, like, different Goodwills around the city, like, in an effort to get the music out. Like,
yes.
Will buy this.
Has that worked at all?
No.
No, not at all.
I don't know. Maybe I might be huge somewhere, and I don't even know. Like, Branson,
in the homeless
Missouri.
Community, you're just blowing up. Just people listen. This is this is good jewel right here. I got this at Goodwill.
You guys, check out this Goodwill band.
Yeah. I got it on my Sony Walkman. It's killer.
Oh, man.
So how were the shows last night at the Palace?
Oh, they were great. You won't believe what the club owner did. This is the best thing ever. He had a fundraiser. You know how he does all these fundraisers,
yeah.
Whatever he can to make some money. And he brought in the Claremont Women's Republican Guild or something. Like, so half the audience were silver lady Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And the show, three women, and our entire show is sex and balls and semen. So the lady came up and introduced herself because she heard I was a veteran. And she's a Republican. So she's like, oh, thank you for your service. You're the most amazing thing ever.
Right.
We're looking forward to hearing your comedy. And I'm like, and I see her little, like, her button and her flag pin, and she's got the Republican elephant right here. And I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, you know that we're... this isn't a clean show. We are really offensive.
Right.
And she's like, oh, well, it's just the content, right? You guys don't swear a lot. I'm like, wait, what?
that doesn't make any sense. That's not how that works.
I'm like, yes and no. We do swear a lot. There is a lot of that.
How did she respond to that?
She was like, oh, and she just kind of batted her eyes like, oh, I'm sure it'll be great. You know, she was just so happy that I was a veteran.
Right.
I guess she thought I could do no wrong. But it ended up being like one of the most fun audiences.
Oh, that's good.
It turns around like that. I don't know how it does, but you think you're going to be dead in the water with a certain audience. But if you just go up, don't change your stuff. Don't change your act.
Yeah.
Do your thing. They love it.
Well, I mean, Zach opens the show up with slap your titties together
and dicks and
whack your balls against your legs. So I think he gets them ready for the hot, wet cum or whatever.
He primed them for
it. Yes.
Oh, no.
So did you guys do the same order?
No, we switched the orders up.
Okay.
And we do that. We just do 25 minutes each. We don't really have an opener or a headliner. Or
okay.
It's just the three of us, and we split it straight down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in three.
Yeah, I guess. And Zach does time between you guys?
Mm-hmm. He does 10 up front, and he just does like a joke here and there in between.
Okay.
He's not our normal host. Our normal host is either Brian Monarch or Justin Wood.
All right.
But since he booked the show, it's his show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're L.A. people, the other two guys?
Mm-hmm.
How's it going up there for you?
Oh, it's great. I mean, I hate L.A.
Right.
But the scene up there is fun.
Because you kind of bounced around. You started here, then you went to Arizona, right?
Right, I was there for 6 months and then came back to L.A., and now I'm trying to get back to San Diego.
Trying to get back. So in full circle.
Yep.
So I guess we'll come back. We'll hear more about Phoenix. Was it Phoenix?
Yeah, if you really want to.
Wasn't a good experience?
It's Phoenix.
All right. Well, we'll find out more with Allison Gill coming back. Check her out at the Comedy Palace tonight at 7:30, 9:45.
Yep.
All right. Listen, WSJ.com, World Lady in the Talk. Bye.
Talk, talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back. Second segment. Still no Jesse. So, Allison, I take it by your facial expressions, the Arizona experience wasn't great?
Oh, well, does anyone have a great Arizona experience?
I only went there once.
Yeah, now, to be fair, there's some really good clubs out there, and I enjoy doing them, and there's some really good comics out there.
Okay.
Jill Bryan's out there. That's Kimmel's sister, and she's just one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. Jimmy Wisman. There's just a lot of really good people out there. And the scene's pretty good. I really like...
Better than San Diego?
No, I don't think anything's better than San Diego right now, even L.A.
Okay.
I'm biased, but...
Right.
And I haven't been to... I've been to New York, but I haven't immersed myself in the scene there. And then I hear Chicago's good, too. But San Diego has 3, 4, 5 premier clubs, and they pay you.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice.
Sometimes they pay you.
That's true.
Some of them pay
sometimes
you.
Sometimes you don't. But sometimes you get to, you know, you get to be on a show with a really a fantastic headliner.
Right. That's what I was... Like, I asked when we did the... Well, you did the Saturday with Nick Batterat. Like, I asked to be on that show because I think he's hilarious.
Right.
So, yeah, that was a cool experience. For me, like, I would have gone to see the show anyway. So I was like, well, maybe I'll just go and perform.
Yeah, yeah.
Might as well ask.
Yeah, that's always a great thing when you're like, oh, I wish I'm going to go see that comedian. And then you get asked to go up. It's nice.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, in L.A., it's you get on a show, you're probably promoted at one of the major clubs, and you're up there with 10 other people who are amazing, and then somebody will come in and bump a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not one of those 10 amazing people, you're probably the first one to go.
All right.
And then, you know, nobody gets paid unless, I mean, even when you're a paid regular, it's still like $7 or something.
Yeah.
It's union minimum or whatever.
Right, right, right.
But Phoenix was, I had to move out there. I had a family thing that was happening.
Okay.
I was supposed to be out there for 2 years. I bought a house. I was on HGTV a couple of times for it, too. I was like, oh, I might as well do this.
What was that for?
House Hunters.
Okay.
I bought a well-known, quirky property in Phoenix and fixed it up, so they put me on HGTV a couple of times.
How did you get that?
How did I get that? Oh, I know. I'm a veteran, and I used a VA loan, and the casting director gets lists of veterans who've purchased homes.
All right.
They might have an interesting story. That veteranness never came up once in the in the show, but they were more interested in the fact that I was a comedian.
Okay.
They filmed a little bit at stand-up's comedy spot.
All right.
Me doing a couple of sets there. So that got in the show, which is, but I still don't use it as a comedy credit.
Did people, anyone recognize you from that? Is that a popular show?
Yeah, it happens a lot. I get recognized a lot for that, surprisingly. So it's weird what you end up, you're like, no, that's not. Tell me you saw me at the Laugh Factory. No,
right.
No, HGTV. Yeah, that was me. Yeah, I bought a house one time.
Right. Do you still have that house?
I'm just now in the process of selling it.
Okay.
But I did rent it out for a while after I came back to L.A. So that should close pretty soon. And then I don't have any ties to Phoenix anymore except for my mom. But I can go back and visit.
You weren't banned from the state?
No. Surprisingly.
Yeah.
It's a different crowd.
Okay.
It's a very red state. So if you have anything politics that might usually work anywhere in California or New York, you can't do it there.
Okay.
But fortunately, I'm not a political comedian, but I know some people who are, and they just don't go to Scottsdale.
All right. So it was more like comedically that it just wasn't a good fit for you, or you just didn't feel comfortable there?
No, it wasn't comedically. It was just Phoenix is just, I mean, it's just terrible. It's a terrible place.
Well, so is in L.A.
Yeah, L.A. is horrible, too, and that's why I'm leaving there as well.
All right.
I mean, L.A., it's I don't know. You've been to Phoenix. It's just large and flat and brown and hot.
Yeah.
And there's not much. They have a pretty good up and coming art scene, and it's getting cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like some people are growing beards now, but I mean, it's still Phoenix.
Yeah. What chose you to go to L.A.?
I took a job, my day job.
All right.
I took a project up there, and I was like, oh, cool. I'm also a comedian. That works out.
Yeah.
So I've been doing both up there, and now I'm kind of done with both up there, and I'm ready to come back.
So you're not performing very often up there?
No, I do.
All right.
You know, every once in a while I'll get like a Reef Ride, or I'll do the Improv, or the Juice, Comedy Juice, or I'll get up on a guest at the Laugh Factory or the Comedy Store or whatever. But mostly the shows that I love up there are like the West Side one-offs, that West Side Comedy Theater. Sean Leary has a great show up there biweekly called Free Parking at the Garage, and that's on the west side.
And these are all book shows?
These are book shows.
All right.
And that's in Culver. And then my favorite show is Bronson Jones, Venice Underground.
All right.
And that's just standing room only, 150 people every week, weekly, free. And he gets like Tom Rhodes and Kyle Kinane, and like he gets big names down there.
And that's just been running for a long time? That's why it's successful?
It's been running for a couple years. And there's just something about it that makes it successful. And it's, you know, that one unidentifiable thing.
Yeah, I've been trying for over 5 years to figure out how to do that at Winston's.
I don't know what it is either.
Yeah.
But it's a lot like The Wood here.
Okay.
But it's in a speakeasy basement, and it's huge. And it's just, I don't know, it's just a great show. I've done it twice, and it's up there with my favorite shows.
Is it a paid show?
No.
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 Okay. Is it cover charge to get in?
Nope, free.
Okay.
Most shows you're going to find up there that are awesome that you want to do you're not going to get paid for.
Okay. So it's more the shitty gigs that you'll get a few bucks for?
Yeah, or, you know, if you get on the Reef Ride or Comedy Juice or whatever, they'll kick you some money. But if you don't get bumped.
Yeah.
But now that What's-His-Face is banned from the Laugh Factory, your chances are a little better.
Dane Cook?
Yeah. I have to know what he did, and I still don't know.
I heard what I read is that he told the waitress off while he was on stage and then just, like, ran the light for a bunch of time. And then just got into her face, I guess. But
I mean, you gotta really do something if you're Dane Cook to be
right
to be banned from.
Was he there a lot?
Yeah, he popped in there all the time.
Okay,
that was his big pop in place. He went there. Louis would pop in at Louis pops in at the Improv. Every once in a while, Dane would go to the Improv, but. You'll see Doug a lot. Doug Stanhope will pop in a lot at the Store. So they all have their own little favorite spots.
Okay.
And I think it's based on what kind of comedy happens there. There's actually different kinds of comedy that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
The Store up there is blowing up and is becoming the favorite because of the roast battle.
Right.
And some.
Have you been to that?
I have. that's an amazing time. Brian, San Diego.
Yeah. Fox Compton.
Yeah, Fox Compton. Oh, my God. Wow.
That's like, he's so anti the way you should promote yourself. Like, that thing is huge. He should be using his own name, but still goes by Fox Compton, which is interesting.
And they've been told to move it to the main room, and he won't do it.
Oh, really?
It's still in the belly room.
Is he, like, afraid that they won't be able to pack that out, or?
No, I think it's he doesn't want to step on the spirit of the smallness of it, but mm-hmm. please have Sarah Silverman there. You know, like,
yeah.
I don't quite. It's working, whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
So I can't.
Have you battled?
I haven't battled. No, oh. I'm a terrible roaster.
You wouldn't like that.
I'm terrible.
Why is that?
Remember how I told you it took me 2 years before I played that song?
Yeah.
Like, I have these insanely terrible quips and roasts in my head every day with everyone I come in contact
okay.
with.
Okay.
And I don't say them. And I feel like when I roast, I want to say these things, but I don't, so I hold back a little, and that just makes it
so you've
terrible.
Never been a part of a roast?
I've been roasted. I didn't have my own roast, but I've been at a roast where I roasted someone, and I can't remember who it was. It was at Winston's.
Okay.
We roasted somebody, and I got roasted a little because I was there.
Did you care that you were roasted?
No, it was actually kind of complimentary, so it didn't bother me at all.
All right.
Yeah.
So you think you would cut too deep? Is that your biggest fear of roasting?
Yeah, I hold back because I think I'm too mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you feel more comfortable roasting a friend or somebody that you didn't really get along with?
I would feel most comfortable roasting someone I would never have to see again.
Okay. So at someone's, like, funeral or something, you could roast them.
Hopefully it doesn't book shows anywhere.
Like, okay.
I don't know. I'm just not good at it for that reason, I think. That's the best introspective
okay.
I can give on that.
But how do you feel listening to people get roasted when you go to these battles?
Some of them are great. Some of them are really good. They ride that line between absolutely, completely inappropriate mm-hmm. and super funny. It's a hard toe. It's a hard line to toe.
Right.
But I've seen some really great ones. And then, you know, the televised ones as well. There's some really great and some really terrible. So
yeah.
It's hit and miss because that is such a fine line.
I think it's interesting. Like, the big roasts, like, on TV work because people all know not really know each other, but the people know, like, who Shaquille O'Neal is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at these roast battles, it's like, it seems like a lot of the comics I wouldn't know.
Yeah. It's,
so it's got to be tough to get those inside burns.
Right. Is like, that Jeffrey Ross versus Bob Smith.
Yeah.
Pacoima. You're like, I don't even know who this is.
Yeah. So does that translate still? So people can still get it even though they don't know this person has a huge drinking problem.
If they're a good roaster, they know to get them, and not anybody knows them personally, they know to get them on their physical attributes. I think it's kind of part of it.
All right. That's smart. Yeah, because Renee battled Bo Scott a little while ago. Renee had me help him out, but I was like, I don't know how it's going to work out. No one knows who you or Bo is.
Who won?
Renee won.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know too much about Bo.
Yeah, I mean, Bo is kind of an easy person to roast, though. I mean, if you go to physical attributes.
Okay.
You know, I mean, he's got a look to him that isn't like a typical comedian's look to him. But, yeah, Bo has one of the funnier stories because he was on here and he said that the first night at ACC when it opened up with Bobby Lee, like the DJ or whatever pressed a button that made like just an alarm go off. So for like, he said like, 45 minutes, the alarm was just going off in ACC while they have like a bald eagle costume. So the bald eagle was just dancing around the stage while they were trying to figure out how to get this alarm to go off. So, yeah, that was
sounds
interesting.
Like the best show
yeah.
ever.
We got more with Allison Gill coming back. You're listening to WSRadio.com. World Live Internet Talk. Bye.
Talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back. Allison Gill in studio. So you were talking earlier that you wanted to take you and the other two maybe to do like kind of a road, take the show on the road?
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. We're early in the development of it. We don't know if we want to do, instead of just our three individual acts, we don't know if we want to do something together at some point in the show.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty new now to figure out what we're going to do with it. So we're staying local right for now.
Mm.
And then I think as we see the thing about comedy that always works best for me is to just see where it goes. Don't try to take it anywhere.
Okay.
Just do it and it'll go somewhere or nowhere. And then, yay, you figured it out.
Right.
So, yeah, we're just keeping it local, doing shows here and there where we can. Done the improv. We've done the Palace. We did Flappers. So that's kind of, I think we'll just see how it congeals.
Have you done any road work?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I've done a New York tour. I did a little mini New York tour. I've done some.
How did you like comedy in New York?
It's very different.
Yeah. Meaning?
They laugh, but it's almost sarcastic. Like they're like, yeah, ha 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 ha.
Right.
You know, funny. It's just a different.
Were they more highbrow?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're more trying to do that alt thing.
Right.
Either that or you need to be Boston, you know.
Okay.
But again, it was a short tour. I didn't really have enough time to kind of assess the scene there.
Yeah.
But I really had a good time, and I love the people in New York. I love New York. I call it L.A. for adults. I do because how I feel about L.A. But I do love it there. And then I did some shows in Ohio, Chicago. I've done Texas.
Texas wasn't fun?
Oh, I had a blast, and it was great. The shows were great. It's just it's you have to be in Texas. To do shows in Texas.
Yes, it's true. That's one of the requirements.
So there you are, surrounded by Texas.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Arizona, Vegas, but
right.
not any like circuits or anything like that.
Okay.
Mostly one-offs or short week-long tours because I have that day job.
Okay.
That I have to go to.
So you're still looking for employment in San Diego?
I am looking to transfer back down to San Diego with the same job that I have now, just different location.
Okay.
There's a couple of things I've applied for. I've got a couple callbacks on second interviews for actually promotions, so we'll see how it goes.
Right. So you are a veteran?
I'm a veteran, yeah.
You're in what branch?
I was in the Navy.
Navy for how long?
A year and a half.
That's it?
Yes.
Okay. How did you get just a year and a half?
It's a really sad story. I was medically discharged honorably.
Okay.
Something very terrible happened, and they let me go.
Okay.
So, so that was... What? Man, 96?
All right, so a little while ago.
It's been a while. Well, it was under Clinton, so we really didn't do much.
Right.
Even if I did a full tour, it would have been just reading.
That's what happened to me. Like, I'd signed up in April of 2001, where nothing had happened ever, and then went to boot camp September 25th, 2001.
Holy
so,
holy.
Yeah, 2 weeks after 9/11.
What branch were you in?
Well, I was in the Air National Guard, but, okay. You know, still shit was crazy at that time.
Oh, yeah.
So how did you like boot camp?
It was, I think if you know what is going to happen, it's pretty easy.
Yeah.
There are people who don't know and don't understand what's happening, and it's really difficult for them.
Did you have family that were in the military?
My dad was Air Force.
All right.
My grandpa was Navy.
All right. So it's somewhat an expectation. You know what was going to happen when you got there?
A little. I mean, and you just know. You know, you have friends that go or whatever, and it's boot camp. There's movies, you know.
Right.
You get a little prep. but it was the Navy. It wasn't.
I don't know what that means.
We swam a little, ran around.
So it wasn't hard for you?
Shoveled snow. There were some hard times, but not really.
Okay.
Not really.
Yeah, because for the most part, people that we've had on that have been former veterans said they enjoyed boot camp.
Yeah. It was all right.
I think while I was there, I was thinking, like, if this was my full-time job, I think I wouldn't mind it. If I got to go home at night, I mean, staying with other dudes every day, that was a little weird. But if I could just do boot camp, that would be kind of a cool job.
Yeah. And I do, you know, I work at the VA, so I work with a lot of veterans still.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... I've been immersed in that situation for a long time.
Is something you enjoy?
I do. It can be very frustrating because of the bureaucracy.
Right.
We can't get the money that we need. We can't get the funding we need. So they're privatizing it now, which is frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Getting contracts for their buddies.
Right.
But, you know, whatever.
So you don't really do much political comedy. Is that by choice? Because it seems like you would have a lot of experience and reasons to talk about politics.
It is by choice. There are a lot of rules where I work about what you can and can't talk about.
All right.
So I just left. I'm like, you know, I'm not even going to. I'm just leaving it out.
it's white pee in my front butt. You can talk about that, but you can't talk about what's going on with the president.
Right.
that's interesting.
Hey, I never said the government made sense.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, what kind of position do you do?
My title is Supervisory Management Program Specialist, but mm-hmm. what I do is I manage all the administrative aspects of the outpatient clinics.
All right.
For the entire greater Los Angeles health system.
Seems like a lot of people.
It is. I have about 150 to 200 employees at any given time.
All right.
I'm responsible for training them. I'm responsible for all the mistakes they make.
These are younger people, I'd imagine.
Some are old. but the thing is that, you know, the whole big scandal that happened in Phoenix, scheduling and wait lists and hiding wait lists and that, all of that is my responsibility. So it's a pretty stressful
I'd
job
imagine.
Because it's easy to get wrong.
So you have to wear long sleeves at work?
I do.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do.
Was that a choice to get those arm tattoos, even though you knew you'd have to keep them covered most of your day?
Yeah, getting a full sleeve whilst getting an MBA is
it's interesting.
It's
I'd
a
imagine.
Weird choice.
Yeah.
But so, yeah. Yeah, no, I knew it was coming.
Right. So you couldn't get, you don't have any visible tattoos that you could see during the day.
No.
Is that a requirement? You can't have that?
It's not a requirement, but it helps your career.
Yeah.
You know.
Your interviews.
Yeah. Dress for the job you want.
Want? I guess that's a thing. So, like, you plan to keep the day job? That's the main, you don't plan to be, like, expanding in comedy?
If whatever happens, happens. the day job pays me so much money that it would just be stupid to not have it.
Right.
And I owe so much on my student loan that it would also be stupid not to at least do one to pay the other.
Right.
And I enjoy it. I like helping veterans.
Right.
So, and I still get to do comedy. Sometimes you get a little flack in the comedy scene for not quitting your day job with the man and going full bore comedy, but I don't care.
I don't think a lot of comics are making good money doing their day jobs.
I think at my best, you're doing their day jobs, not the comedy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know too many.
Because I always tell myself, like, if I got, like, a really good paying job, I think that would take away from my motivation to be successful in comedy. Do you ever struggle with that, your motivation, knowing that you make decent money good money during the day?
Well, my only if you think about it, because my only motivation in comedy is to get in front of people and make them laugh.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people have this aspirations to become writers, do scripts, get shows, be on shows, you know, maybe you get a movie deal, something, like get an hour HBO special, whatever it is. And I don't. That would be awesome. But to me, the only way I'm working toward that is to just getting in front of people and being funny.
All right.
So it's, I guess all my comedy goals are extremely short term.
Okay.
Tonight's show is going to be awesome. That's my comedy goal.
That's it? Do you think it has something to do with the kind of, you almost, comedy just kind of fell into your lap?
It did.
You know, you weren't really expecting to do comedy.
No. And it's, and I've never, it comes to me. I feel like when you just focus on being funny, it comes to you. It'll come to you.
Okay.
And I could be completely 100% wrong. If I don't know, if I could gave up my day job and like went out and beat the pavement and did all, you know, put all my energy into that, who knows where I'd be?
Yeah.
I can't say. I just don't.
Right.
I just don't know unless you do it. And I can't give up that day job. It means too much to me.
Yeah. The reason that makes me laugh is because I own this movie. What the hell is it called? Whatever. It doesn't matter. And it's Jamie, who's Masada. Is he the Laugh Factory guy?
Yeah.
He was in the movie, and they were showing, like, I guess he was given open micers reviews of their sets or whatever.
Okay.
And he just turns to one guy. He's like, Don't quit that day job of yours. You keep that day job for as long as you can. Come back in 4 months or whatever like that. So.
Yeah. And did you see the Louis where he gave advice to the micer?
Probably.
Yeah, it was a pretty recent one. He's just like, just stop. You're not going to, just don't do comedy. Like, and he took him out to dinner because he felt bad. But he was like sitting there like, no, you're just, you think you're funny? Like, it was really uncomfortable, as many Louis scenes are, but it was really funny to watch.
I saw the newest, I think it was season 4, whatever's come out on Netflix. And I think it's interesting because it's definitely going away from being a comedy to more of like a drama at this point,
mm-hmm.
you know, which I think is interesting because he has such control over a show that he's like, I'm going to do it the way I want. I don't mm-hmm. care if it's funny or not.
You know? Yeah. I hope he keeps going. I think he's great, but I think he's in a little bit of hot water right now. So we'll see.
Oh, about the SNL thing?
No, the jerking off in front of ladies thing.
Is that a thing? I didn't read about that.
Yeah, it's a big thing right now. Apparently, a bunch of female comedians are saying that he takes them to his hotel room after and jerks off in front of them and won't let them leave.
He's like a less aggressive Bill Cosby,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. It's like Bill Cosby light.
Yes.
Like, I'm not going to touch it. I'm just going to jerk off. You're going to stay right there.
Or they won't get to open for him or something?
I don't know. I honestly...
I'd let him jerk off out front of me if I got to open for him.
That just sounds like a great story to have to me.
I wouldn't be that offended. All right. Well, we got one more segment with Allison Keel coming back. You're listening to WSRadio.com, the worldwide leader in internet talk. Be back in 3 minutes. Bye.
Talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back. Final segment already. So I talked about on the break that I got interviewed for the UT San Diego this week. And the interviewer asked me this question. I guess I'll ask you as well. Are women funny?
I don't think that's the right question. It's is this person funny?
Right.
Is that person funny? I tend not to like a lot of comedy that women do when it's hack,
mm-hmm.
but that's the same for dudes. There's just a lot more dudes out there. I've only met a couple of female comedians that I really, really like.
Right.
But I can say the same thing about guys.
Exactly.
So it's like there's just more guys vying for those 5 spots.
That's kind of the way I approached it, being like, well, there's less women to choose from, so of course they're going to be less funny because there's less of them.
Right.
You know, it's just numbers game. But I also said, like, it's much easier for a woman to gain recognition and prominence because there's fewer of them.
I think that's why it's a lot of the stuff has come so easy for me, at least, is because I'm a female, I have a song, I have a guitar. I'm different.
Right.
So if you're funny, even if it's just a, you know, like basic level funny, as long as you're funny, the more different you are, the easier it's going to be for you, I think.
Of course.
So and I actually embrace the fact that I'm a woman.
Yeah, because you do a show and it's probably 8 dudes and you,
mm-hmm.
you know, so people are like, hey, remember that girl? No one's going to be, hey, remember that white guy? Which white guy?
That one
all,
white guy?
All of them? Yeah.
Yeah, and they'll remember me. They'll remember the guitar, but I also hear, wow, I never really liked women comedians before, but you're funny.
Right.
So it kind of helps me out that people think that.
What they're really saying is I've never seen a female comic that made me laugh.
Right.
Not I've never seen a funny, you know.
Of course.
So it's just a weird question, and it's pretty much how I answered it, being like, well, there's just not that many to choose from.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like when they did like the comedy festival the comedy awards a few years back in San Diego, like there was only like 6 female comics to choose from to who's the funniest female comic. Well, we got 6 to choose from.
Yeah, and yeah. I didn't get any. And but Dan said it was because I moved to L.A.
Yeah.
But Russell Hicks got.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. Okay.
That was a pretty stupid, because Russell had been gone for like 2.5 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they said you had to be in San Diego for the past. Yeah, that was stupid. Although I won two awards, so I'll say it was a great idea to do.
It was a great show, yeah.
It was a great idea. The most fun was that me and Jesse made up fake awards and gave them to people.
What do you like? What?
I don't know. Do you know who Stella Bay is?
Uh-uh.
All right, she says the N-word a lot on her posts. So it was just like the most racist person on Facebook, or like something about what was it? The most likely to buy their way onto a show would be Medicinal Mike. Because I don't know if you've ever seen him, like, he'll pay for all of his friends to get into the show and, like, buy them drinks. So, just stupid things like that. So
awesome.
Yeah, that was the most fun to
do. Do they still do that every year?
No, they tried to do it last year, but they didn't make it anonymous. So they wanted people to write to Brandon or Dan, like, I think that Dan Venti's the funniest comic in San Diego. So, like, it wasn't anonymous. So, like, only seven people did the ballot.
Oh.
So then they were like, I guess we can't do it. We don't have enough people.
Well,
so.
Now, does that mean that San Diego comics aren't as funny as Los Angeles comics? No, there's just not as many to choose from.
Yeah, there's just not as many. But I will say, I mean, watching this weekend at the store, like, a lot of those comics that come down, like, aren't that strong because they're just not used to doing shows with crowds.
No. Some of the best comedians working in L.A. right now came from San Diego.
Yeah.
And I see more good comedy here than I do in Los Angeles. And, again, it's inundated. Like, 5,000 people come out to every day, it seems, to try to be a comedian.
Right.
So that's where you're going to get the good and the bad.
Yeah. Does the traffic bother you?
Yeah. I mean, that's always terrible. But, I mean, nobody talks about it. It's just...
Just something you accept?
Everybody in L.A. knows that if you're talking about the traffic in L.A. that you're not from there.
Okay.
But it's really, really, really terrible. I work 4 miles from work. I live about 4 miles from work, and it takes me about 45 minutes to get home.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible.
It's gross.
It's pretty. The 805 gets a little backed up around here nowadays.
Yeah, the rush hour can get a little goofy down. It's cute, but it can get a little snarly. But
yeah, well, for me anyways, it takes me 15 minutes to get to work and like an hour to get home.
Yeah.
So that's San Diego problems, as Renee likes to tell me. But you ever see Renee up there, Lancaster?
Yeah, I run into him at the store a lot.
Yeah.
I see Steve Garza up there, Santos, Bonnell, Mervis. I run into a lot of San Diego people.
Okay.
Up there.
Are they making the rounds to other places?
Yeah, uh-huh. Santos is doing really well. Bonnell, as you know, he got on that house party thing, and mm-hmm. he's been doing really well.
He's opening for Dat Fan this weekend in Vegas.
Oh, is Dat Fan that large now?
But Dat Fan is a big name.
God, that's crazy.
He sells out all.
Remember when he wasn't?
Never. He still sells out like every show he does down here.
Like we'd be at Aces and we'd be like, oh, Dat Fan. Everyone's like, oh, ooh.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I guess he's killing it. Sounds like it.
Did you ever watch Last Comic Standing, the one that he was on?
No.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like in high school when that was out. And, like, I remember watching it with my family. So my mom thought it was a big deal when I first started and I got like Dat Fan's business card. My mom was like, no way, you got Dat Fan's business card?
That's so funny.
So like I mailed it home to her and like she was impressed.
I am terrible with knowing who's how big though. Like my first show that I did at the Hollywood Improv, which was probably my favorite show. We are
about to get there, so you might as well go into... Usually we start with your worst show, but we can start with your best show.
That was that one. And I forget where we were going with that. What were we talking about? We were talking about Dat Fan.
Dat Fan, yes.
Oh, I don't know who's famous, right? So mm-hmm. I'm on this show, and there's a guy named Thomas Lennon on there, and there's a guy named Russell Peters on this show. And I go up, do my... act, Gene Simmons. See, I am so old.
I think you just love the palace and you got George's name just in your head.
Gene Simmons and his wife are in the front row and it's just a sold packed house. It's a Friday night.
Yeah.
I can't believe I got this show.
Right.
2 years into my comedy. And went up there with, I think, Callens and Wolpe. And that was the night Wolpe did his joke on the street.
Oh, okay.
To try to get stage time on the stage, and so he just did the mountain joke, and then they were like, what else you got? He's like, that's it. They're like, we're like, why didn't you do your set? He's like, I wanted to save my set for when I got inside. We're like, you can't get inside on the mountain joke.
Yeah,
it was hilarious. But so I go up, get off stage, and there's this guy in the lobby who I thought it was Rajan at first. And I'm like, oh, hey. And then it's not. And I'm like, oh. And he's like, oh, yeah, that was fucking hilarious. That was really good stuff. Whoa, blah, blah, blah. that song is amazing. I'm like, yeah, okay, thanks. And he's kind of grabbing my butt and stuff. And I'm like, all right, get away from me, dude. And then he goes up and crushes it. And somebody's like, that was Russell Peters. And I was like, I don't even know who you're talking about. And like a month later, I'm like flipping through the channels and I see Russell Peters' Green Card Tour. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, he got himself a special.
That's
and
adorable.
Yeah, oh, cute. He's made it. He made it. 60,000 people. Yeah. I Google him. He makes $15 million a year. I'm all, oh.
He's like the most famous comedian in the world.
Yeah,
and you have no idea who he is.
I'm like, come back. Grab my ass again.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was, and I, Thomas Lennon, no idea. I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know who Thomas Lennon is.
He played the gay guy in I Love You, Man.
Okay. I probably would know him
by
song.
He's one of the Apatow crew.
Yeah.
But, man, yeah, I don't know anyone. So Dat found, like, oh, okay. I just did a show with him a couple times, and I'm like, yeah, he's funny.
Seemed nice. I liked his headband.
Is he sweaty?
Quickly, do you have one show that was your worst show?
Oh, yeah. I did some dim sum buffet thing for a bunch of, like, 400 retired cops in a banquet hall, and that was just miserable.
It wasn't good?
30 minutes, and after like a minute, I'm like, I gotta get out of here.
Did you make it to the 30?
I did, and it went okay, but it was torture.
All right, well, Allison, thanks for coming in. Check her out at the Comedy Palace. You're listening to WSRadio.com. World Radio Talk. Bye.